Welcome back, everyone. We're glad you are here and joining us for a basic conversation. Today, Father Basic and I will be examining how we can cultivate our own holiness. And Father Basic, our discussion extends the themes that you conveyed in a lecture that was titled Finding Our Unique Path to Holiness, Developing the Gift of Discernment. Now, we could just spend that title alone sparks reflection, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
I mean, the idea of finding our own path, it alludes to a personal view of spirituality. Holiness has a unique, there's some challenging aspects to what that means and different definitions. Discernment, obviously prayerful and thoughtful way of living. And then you put the word gift in front of discernment. So let's just start. What did you mean by the gift of discernment?
Yeah, we need a lot of background on this, Brad, to make sense.
It's a great title.
Let me go back even further and say one of the important things is that we're all called to holiness. Important in the Catholic community. It was often a thought in the Catholic community that priests and nuns are the holy ones and they're to keep the Beatitudes. And Catholic lay people should keep the commandments and not do anything wrong and so on. But Vatican II, 1962 to 65, Second Vatican Council, called by Pope John the 23rd, so important, said, no, we're all called to holiness. It's a universal call by virtue of our baptism. So the most important sacrament is not holy orders by which I'm made a priest, but by baptism, which makes us all sharers in the universal priesthood of Christ. So first point, we're all called to holiness.
Right.
That would be a way to start the whole thing. And then to say that we have a unique path, that we can't follow somebody else's path. We can't all be saints like Saint Agnes was or somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that that we're all called by God. I like the phrase, we're all called, God calls us by name. God has given us certain talents and gifts. We find ourselves in a particular situation in our world, in a certain culture, a certain historical time, and so on. And the job is to be holy in that setting, in that particular situation. And that can't you? I was just thinking, there was a parents who had their daughter, a very holy daughter, died at an early age, and part of the response was to think of, to try to be holy in her way. And they're grieving and so on. It's a terrible situation. And I'm talking to them and I'm saying, no, it's not to imitate your daughter's holiness. She was a wonderful, holy young woman, for absolutely sure. But to find your own way to be holy now, which probably means something like supporting each other in this grieving process or allowing your spouse to grieve in a different way than you do. So it becomes very concrete to find our own way. Then the other word you used was discernment.
And the gift of discernment.
Yeah, that's a good point. Gift of discernment, yeah. All things are gifts from God. The Holy Spirit, we talk about gifts of the Holy Spirit and so on. But discernment has been a word that's been popular in the Jesuit world thanks to the exercises of St. Ignatius. And so a lot of, again, it's a new word for many people, discernment.
Mm-hmm.
And Pope Francis loves to do it, say it. He's a Jesuit, Pope Francis, his Jesuit background, steeped in the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius. And that whole thing is a matter of discernment. And what it fundamentally means is that we try to build prayer into finding out what to do. In other words, you're trying to figure out if you're going to marry Laura or not, you know, your wonderful wife.
Yes. And 34 years.
34 years, yes. Yeah, beautiful thing.
You were there.
Yes,
a
big
altar.
Moment for
yes.
Sure. And then big moments along the way. So, you know, one way to think about it, well, how many pluses in my, Laura's got these four good points and these two difficult points, you know, what am I going to do? But that isn't the way it works, really.
Mm-hmm.
Discernment becomes, you're a Christian man, you're steeped in the Catholic tradition, You have a prayer life and so on. And it's out of that root, that basis, that strength from within that you sort of play out, is this going to work for me? It's a matter of the heart very often. Yeah, she's the right person for me. I know it now. You know, I fell in love. Now I know it, and I can proceed on it. So that it's a thing that we sort of do naturally. We're putting words to it now. And if we try to do it systematically, we'd say, well, you got to figure out if you're going to take a new job or not. Mm-hmm. And so one of the ways to do it is to get some time off, get some quiet time, do some praying, try to be in tune with God's will, quiet the outer noises and so on, listen to one's heart, think it through and so on, and play out the options. If I take this job, how does it feel to me? How will that be? If I take another job, how would that be? So I play out the options, mm-hmm. okay? And in playing out the options, if we're in a prayerful state and we're doing this, one will probably appear to be right. Mm-hmm. It's just, I know this is what. I like to do that. If I can delay a decision easily and not have to make it till next week and so on, I like to just let it play in my mind and heart and just let the options appear and so on and go through it. And oftentimes, I'm sure you and everyone else find some option becomes clear. Right. This is what I got to do.
Right.
I don't need four pluses and two minuses. I know this is what I have to do. So somehow discernment's got that. It's got a prayerful side to it, a quiet side, listening to the heart, listening to my religious tradition and so on, and how that will guide my decision. It will just seem right. Yeah. It will just seem fitting.
And when the lecture, you were able to, for me, as a participant, as an audience member, demystify holiness and make it more pragmatic mm-hmm. and make it more personal. So let's just talk about how you did that, because it was very effective. And the interesting part is that you chose Cardinal Newman yeah. to be kind of you role-played Cardinal Newman, and you had seven individuals, vignettes, yeah. and they came forward, and they were discerning various issues. They were trying to think through and how to live yeah. most effectively. And let me ask you, first of all, why did you choose Cardinal Newman for this?
Yeah. Well, because he's good at it. But a lot of people don't know who Newman is. Cardinal Newman, John Henry Newman, 19th century figure, spanned the century, was a teacher at Oxford, which he loved. Mm. He was a fellow of Oriel, and started thinking through his Anglican faith. He was an Anglican priest, preacher, and thinking through, does that make sense to me or not? And how does it fit in with the Roman Catholic Church? And he went through a 5-6 year process of discernment, which led him to become a Catholic priest and a cardinal, and just recently canonized as a saint yes. of the Catholic Church. So, and people might know him through Newman clubs.
University level, yeah, yes.
I think it was back in the University of Pennsylvania early in the century, maybe, who started Newman clubs, and it became popular. So if people do know the word Newman, yes. it's because of Newman clubs at secular universities, and where students gather and pray and do their reach outreach to others and do their social justice work and so yeah. on. So Newman, yeah, important figure. So I think what I did was role play that Newman was actually there.
He was there. You
talking.
Were, yes, you assumed the,
I think he started
his
off by
voice.
Saying, thanks for resurrecting me.
Yes, I got a good laugh. Got a good laugh.
Yeah. So I was trying to use his great work at discernment as a guide.
Yeah. And the first one, and each one of these vignettes or people that came forward had some really good pieces to it. And the first one was Isaac. He was a freshman at the university level, trying to figure out how to make the best of it. And Cardinal Newman gave him some real practical things, like don't drink too much, get yeah. a mentor, connect yeah. with a faculty. But then you shared this a broader view of what education can be at the college level. And you encouraged Isaac to cultivate the mind, seek truth, look at making connections. It wasn't just job preparation or accumulating knowledge. Important, but it was a challenge I found really.
Yeah, that all comes from Cardinal Newman. He wrote a famous book, The Idea of a University, and that you should cultivate the mind. Mm-hmm. When you're at school, you should learn to think, should learn to be critical, to marshal evidence, to support claims, and so on. And so you become, he called it becoming a gentleman who could think clearly in different situations, could use general principles to guide specific decisions and so on. So yeah, the idea of a university is very important work. It's one of the enduring things of Newman, of what a university should be. And he thought a university should be a place for serious study. Yeah, I think we warned Isaac, don't drink too much.
There were practical aspects,
yeah,
so yes.
Yeah, don't party too much, and make sure you do your work. But learn to think and learn to marshal evidence and to come to reasonable conclusions and so on.
You also encouraged to keep the spiritual habits you have and keep going to Mass.
Yeah.
And you had a really interesting tidbit in there, and it had to do with deep reading of a text.
Yeah.
Meaning pick something that's meaty and spend time with it, because we're doing so much texting and social media and TV. And that was a great tip for all of us, not just Isaac as a freshman in college.
Yeah, that I like to think of all the advice we gave in that lecture to have broader significance.
Yes.
Yeah, close reading of a text, of picking something that's important, reading it carefully, taking notes, thinking through what it means, going back over things that you don't understand, discussing with somebody else parts of it that are difficult to apprehend and so on. Yeah, read a book carefully.
Right. The next person, the role play, was Bert. I'm not sure if that was a biblical name, but Bert was there, and he was struggling with some of the things with the church, corruption, the sex abuse aspect. And one of the things Cardinal Newman said, does you get something out of going to Mass?
Yeah.
And Bert said yes. So the idea was, we'll go to Mass, understand that the church is grace-filled but also sinful,
yeah,
and go into Mass knowing that and try to make the church better.
Yeah, well, that young man, we had an advantage that he did like going to Mass.
You know? Might say, no, I don't.
Yeah, at least he did said that he liked doing it. So that was something to build on, which would be my general approach to dealing with anybody. Find out where they're at. Find out what it is they like and don't like about the church. So the issue here is, should I be a member of the church or not? Mm-hmm. And the problem area was sex abuse, which was a terrible thing, horrendous. I dealt with a lot of victims of sex abuse, clerical sex abuse. It ruins people for life. Mm-hmm. And the fact that priest sex abuse was even worse, because it brought God into the picture and church. And some never recovered from them. Some committed suicide. And anyway, yeah, a terrible problem. So the question is to take a balanced view of the church and say, well, it's a sinful church. It's graced but sinful.
Yeah.
That would be my general statement. It's graced by God. It does some good things. It's carried on a tradition. It's kept the memory of Jesus alive. But it's had all kind of failures, the Inquisition, the Crusades, wars, bad things, terrible popes, bad people in leadership, and so on. So the question is then, on balance, does this symbol system, this whole package that we call the Catholic Church in this case, is it work for you? Does it do more good for you than bad? Which is a nice framework for thinking through whether one's going to participate or not. I know somebody just told me recently, I had urged them to, well, if you leave the church, I'm not sure you're going to have any leverage on making it better.
Right.
You know, if you're in it, maybe you can get your pastor to preach more on social justice.
Right.
Or maybe you can help people, young people, prepare for marriage.
Right. The third person was Agnes, and she was an agnostic. And Cardinal Newman, she was trying to figure out how to deal with that. How does that fit into how she lives as a human being? And Cardinal Newman said that you can never prove that there's a God.
No.
You just can't. But there's a term, and I'd never heard this before, converging probability.
Yeah.
And explain that.
Yeah, that's what he thought that we do with knowledge generally, that we come to a position because a number of factors suggest that that is the right way to go, or that that's the right way to think about things. So that I think we do that with many things in life. Go back to choosing a mate. There's converging probabilities. We talk well together. We have fun together. We're physically attracted to one another. You know, I put it all together, and it's looking like a nice package.
Right.
Let's get engaged and get married. So, yeah, that's the way we deal with a lot of things. In other words, even something like, does Australia exist or not?
Right.
I mean, were you ever in Australia? Well, if you were, then maybe you know it exists. But otherwise, people say they went there. It's on maps,
right.
You know, and they got a legislators and so on. So converging probabilities, so that's the way with belief in God. This person is dealing with belief in God. And to think that we could take, hey, I got five proofs for you, Miss Agnostic, and it come from St. Thomas Aquinas, and these five proofs, I'll give them to you and you'll believe in God. Well, it isn't going to work. Very often, the matter of accepting a faith is pragmatic. That is, does it work or not? Does it help you when your grandmother dies? Mm-hmm. Does it help you make a better marriage? Yeah.
I think you also made the point of, do you find life meaningful or absurd?
Yeah.
If you find it meaningful, well, you're trending probably towards a belief in God.
Well said, Brad. Well said. And you picked out such an important point. I think when you get finally down to the deepest questions, is life meaningful or absurd? You know, Camus said life is absurd. You know, it's like Sisyphus pushing a rock up to the top of the mountain, only falls down, got to push it up again. It's absurd. Right. So there's authors who think life is absurd. But people who think that life is meaningful and think they're agnostic, I'd love to have conversations with them. Why do you think it's meaningful? Mm. You know, is it meaningful because two-thirds of the world at some point is starving to death? You know, does the Holocaust or Gulag support that? Probably not, you know. There's something else that's going on that makes you think that life is meaningful. And if so, then one way of explaining that, converging probabilities, well, there must be a God who's in charge of it. Mm-hmm. There must be a God who's a final judge. There must be a God who's trying to promote good in the world.
And if the meaningful, absurd kind of juxtaposition was enough, the last point was, where do you want to be in your final days?
Yeah, right.
Where do you want to, it's just a very pragmatic and...
Yeah.
Where do you want to be with that?
Yeah. What are you going to rely on when you get seriously ill?
Yes.
Or when you're suffering the diminishments of age? Mm. When you can't hit the golf ball anymore, you know?
Right.
Then where do you fall back on, in a sense? You know? Yeah.
You mentioned pragmatic. And the next pragmatic approach to holiness and spirituality, Lydia, the next one, really hit it for me. And you cemented it by Bill Belichick. You connected Bill Belichick to Lydia, who was a successful businesswoman and had a lot going for her, but she felt like she should be more, she wanted to increase her spirituality in some way. And you said basically, just do everything you're doing with your full heart and mind.
Do your job, Bill Belichick. Yeah. Tom Brady loved to bring that up. You know, at halftime, we're down 2 touchdowns. What's the message? Do your job. Everyone has to do their job. So, yeah, I think that it's not finding something special. It's doing what we're supposed to do as well as we can do. So if you got a job, do the job well, prepare well. You know, be nice to the people around you, compassionate, kind of. You make money, use the money to help others.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, we don't have to find some other path, you know. We have to do it on a day-to-day basis. That was Newman's big thing, day-to-day basis.
Consistency.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jacob was the fifth one, and he had a son that was gay, struggled with it, came around to it, eventually loved his son, but really struggled the stance of the church and wanted some discernment in how to figure that out. And one of the things that Cardinal Newman talked about was this idea of the importance of your conscience in making moral decisions.
Yeah.
And the statement that really struck me was conscience over the Pope.
Yeah, really. It's a famous statement of Newman. It goes something like this. If I'm called to give an after-dinner talk praising the Pope, I will do so. But first, I will praise conscience. First, I will drink to conscience. So that was his big thing. He thought that if we follow our conscience, eventually we're going to get in the right place. So moral theology has always said the real norm for do what you're going to do is what your conscience tells you to do. But your conscience has to be formed. You're supposed to think through. You're supposed to think, well, what does my church say about this? You know, what do good people say about it? You know, what do the people I admire say about it? So that we are forming our conscience. But it's a judgment. It's a personal judgment. I have to speak out against racism in my neighborhood. I have to welcome the black family that just moved in. I have to do that. I'm called. It's a call, very personal kind of thing. So yeah, he said he'd drink to the Pope, fine, but he wants to drink to conscience first, because that's our norm for making decisions. That when someday, before we're in the judgment seat, you think of this. It's not, well, what did the Pope say, or what did your priest tell you to do? What did you think you should do? What was your best job? And Newman thought, even if conscience seems to be taking us in a wrong direction, we should follow it. So a lot of young people that I know who stop going to church and so on, and parents are all upset and so on, sometimes they were on a spiritual journey by going away from the church, by finding other paths and so on. They're following their own conscience. This is what I have to do. And Newman said, don't break that up. Support it. And my teacher, Carl Rahner, says, every time someone goes on a journey away from the church, leaves the church for a while, and returns, we don't have to think of them on the model of the prodigal son. They might have been on a faith-filled, conscience-driven journey that whole time.
The idea of the conscience and kind of the moral decision-making or the moral fiber of who we are, isn't it? That's the ultimate free will, right?
Yeah.
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 The sixth person that came to see Cardinal Newman with some discernment was Prisca. Interesting name.
That's a biblical name.
It's a biblical name, yep. And she wanted to improve her prayer life. And Cardinal Newman talked about his kind of evolution and from Anglican to Catholic, and that the Eucharist became a really big part of his.
Yeah.
But really, it gave some very personal experiences, but also gave some advice, like keeping notebooks on people. But the one thing that was interesting to me was suggestion to start with Luke if you're looking for prayer.
Yeah.
Why Luke?
Yeah, a lot of people ask me, okay, I want to start reading the Bible. Where should I start? Don't start with the book of Numbers.
A little dry?
Yeah, really. Don't start there. And, I mean, a lot of it would depend on me of who I'm talking to.
Sure.
If I'm talking to someone with a strong mystical sense already in their prayer life, I might say, let's read John's gospel together. And let's follow his progression of thought. No, but for a lot of people, I do most often suggest the gospel of Luke, because Luke's got a lot of compassion in it, a lot of understanding. That's where you get this parable of the Good Samaritan. you know, and the prodigal son, the stories that bring out God's forgiveness and so on. So in Luke, for many people, is more readable. It reads more like something more modern. There's a clear storyline that you can follow. Yeah, and the other thing I would say is that we call it Lectio Divina. That's Latin words for a sort of sacred reading of the Bible. And when you do this, so you're going to read Luke. So get yourself quiet, turn the TV off and everything, and say a prayer to God to guide you, and then start reading Luke's Gospel. And so you get to some place and, oh, that's, and stop. Something interests you. Stop. Close the book. And now think about it. Reflect on it. Pray over it. Mary went to visit Elizabeth. Interesting. Yeah. You know, I haven't visited my cousin who's been in a nursing home for years now. You know, and so I think about it, and I try to see what it might be saying to me. That might take 10 seconds, 30 seconds. It might take I set aside a half hour. Right. It might take my whole half hour to think about Mary's visit to Elizabeth and so on, and what that would mean for me. But, say I exhausted in the first minute, I open the book up again. I start reading right where I left off, and I read till something else strikes me. Mm. And now I will go with that. So, and then at the end of it all, we should say another prayer, like we prayed at the beginning, God guide me, help me to understand the meaning of your scriptures, your word, and so on. At the end, we're going to say a prayer of thanks for any insights we got, any ideas, any good motivation, any call to action that came from it. So yeah, it's a Lectio Divina, we call it. Mm.
And then the seventh person that came to see Cardinal Newman was Sam, and he was been a widow for a couple of years, and obviously still grieving. But then he met someone, and in trying to figure out, well, what does this mean? How can I still be grieving, but still be starting a friendship or an attraction with someone else, and looking for this the next way forward? And that's where Cardinal Newman brought this idea of lead kindly light.
Yeah.
What a powerful.
Yeah. What's the send lead? That's his big poem. He wrote it when he was had some illness and was traveling and so on. It's probably his most famous poem, Lead Kindly Light.
And it's about not necessarily knowing where you're going to end up or even where you're going, but yeah. Just
you have that first line.
The next step. I don't have the. What's the next step for you? Something about the next step.
Yeah, he says, not the distant scene, but one step.
One step.
Yeah.
There's a lot of wisdom in that.
So what I meant, telling this guy who's interested in this lady, take it slow.
Yeah.
Go one step at a time, see where it takes you. You don't have to see the distant shore. You know, you don't have to see the distant spot yet, but have fun, you know, enjoy the process. That's part of this whole idea of living in the moment. You know, if we're always thinking about where is it going to end up and mm-hmm. what's the future hold and so on, we're not living in the moment. So part of it is live now, enjoy your time with her, see how it's going, learn to talk better, improve your communication and so on. One step.
Is there a time for you as a theologian, as a priest, that you feel most in tune with God? When do you feel the most in tune with God yourself?
Yeah, I've always said that if I have a good virtue, it's usually gratitude. Thanksgiving is a big feast for me. I think that I have a natural sense of gratitude for people who are kind to me or have been mentors to me and so on, and that some of my deepest prayer comes that way. Mm-hmm. When I, one of my nightly prayer has to do for me with centering on praising God, awe, being awe, a sense of awe before the vastness of God, this long creation and so on, a sense of feeling dependent upon God totally, of trying to do God's will, contrition for sinfulness, and then gratitude, gratitude for blessings. So usually I can tick off or get more emotion going that way, especially when I make it concrete. Like my mother's birthday, it was recently, and I think about what I learned from her, and I can feel some emotion that way.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing kind of your unique path to holiness, and the your lecture and the themes you talked about in the lecture and here.
I must say, Brad, you did a great job of bringing back those various vignettes I used in the lecture. I appreciate that as a guideline to think about the
conversation. Well, each vignette, you had a purpose, and you were bringing themes out of those vignettes.
Exactly, yeah. So the hope is that what we all went through is that whatever people are struggling with in life, they might find that discernment is a way to go about it. Prayerful, careful, step by step, looking at our lives. And if we're going to become holy, one step at a time.
One step at a time. Lead kindly life. It's a good way to end right there. Lead kindly life. Thank you, Father Basic.